Well, here we are, right in the middle of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In fact, we're beyond the middle, because I guess at noon today would have been the middle. But it's going fast. Let's turn with me, if you would, to Amos chapter 4. One of the most poignant passages in the Bible is found here in the fourth chapter of Amos. It was during the reign of Jeroboam II. They had an economic boom going on. Things were going well. Everybody was comfortable in their living. They had everything they wanted. They also had things they didn't need. They had corruption, idolatry, just like our day, just like our day today. Here we see Yahweh's complete disgust with his people. It says, "Hear this word, ye king of Bashan, that are in the mountain of Samaria, which oppress the poor, which crush the needy, which say to their masters, bring and let us drink. Yahweh Elohim has sworn by his holiness that, lo, the day shall come upon you that he will take you away with hooks and your prosperity with fish hooks. And you shall go out at the breaches, every cow at that which is before her, and ye shall cast them into the palace, says Yahweh." So here we have these people that are considered happy, fat, wallowing in luxury and comfort. Bashan was an area in northern Transjordan, rich for grazing. Had all sorts of rich countryside there where everything was fine. And the land of milk and honey, basically, is what it was. And their life was dulled. Their senses were dulled by all of this because everything was going so well. Same thing happens to us, you know. When things are going so well, we end up with little regard for Yahweh. We turn to him when we need him. That's basically the message of the scripture. Yahshua said of the assembly at Laodicea, "Because you say, I'm rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and know that you are what? Wretched, miserable, blind, poor, and naked." So anyway, he's speaking of the Assyrian captivity, which Israel ultimately went into, being led with hooks in their noses, and that's actually what happened, just like farm animals. And he's totally in disgusted with Israel. He says, if you want it so much to have it that way, then go ahead, have at it. He says, chapter 4, verse 4, "Come to Bethel and transgress. At Gilgal, multiply transgressions and bring your sacrifices every morning and your tithes after 3 years." Speaking of the third tithe. "And offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving with leaven and proclaim and publish the free offerings. For this you like to do, you children of Israel." So he says, go ahead and offer. You know, the leaven was never offered in a burnt offering to Yahweh. It was given in the wave loaves at Pentecost. It was given at other times when the priest would eat the meal, but it was never burned on the altar. Yahweh doesn't accept leavening as an offering. But he says, go ahead and do that now, because you're already so full of sin, it doesn't really matter anymore. Go ahead and transgress. It was sarcastic, actually, the prophet was at this point, but Israel deserved it. Leviticus chapter 2 and verse 11, we can read about leavening. Leviticus 2 and verse 11 says, "No meat offering which you shall bring unto Yahweh shall be made with leaven, for you shall burn no leaven nor any honey in any offering of Yahweh made by fire." Remember that now, and people say, you can go ahead and use it in an offering or anything. Yahweh says, whenever you make a specific offering to me, don't use leavening. And don't use any honey, because honey can ferment. That's part of it, you know. So, anyway, that's... And also in Leviticus chapter 7 and verse 12, it says, "If you offer it for a thanksgiving, then he shall offer with the sacrifice of thanksgiving unleavened cakes mingled with oil, and unleavened wafers anointed with oil, and cakes mingled with oil of fine flour fried. Besides the cakes he shall offer for his offering, leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving for his peace offering. Peace offering was shared. It was eaten. So anytime a leavening was offered in an offering, it was for the consumption of man, not for Yahweh. When you burn something, it's like Yahweh consumed it. He even talks about it that way. And also in the consecration offering of Exodus 24:2, and the Nazarite offering in Numbers 6:15. Well, let's go back to Amos chapter 4. In other words, since you people don't appreciate what Yahweh has done, he says, go ahead and pollute your thanksgiving offering to him. Use leaven. I mean, go all the way with it. Use leaven, an ingredient that is only for man to consume. It puffs up. There's error in it, of hypocrisy, wickedness, because that's what you represent, he's telling Israel. Strong indictment for a sinful nation. Why didn't Israel have leavened bread to begin with back in Exodus? Because they didn't have time. Didn't have time to rise when they left Egypt. They had to leave before the bread could ferment. 1 Corinthians 5:6, we know this one. Paul says, your glorying is not good. Know you not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Anytime we neglect some leaven in our lives, it is there to do its work again, like part of a root. They say that we've got a lot up going on now, dandelions, their roots run down maybe 3 feet. You can't just rip them out. They'll just come right back. You got to get way down and get that root out or kill that root. Same thing with leaven. If you don't get it out, it comes back and back and back. And it doesn't do it always very obviously. It's usually not very noticeable. You don't notice it until there's a big problem going on. It works behind the scenes. Exodus 12:34, the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs being bound up in their clothes upon their shoulders. So they didn't have time. When we're pursuing Yahweh, we don't have time to worry about the leaven. We have other things on our mind, the important things. We know that leavening is a process of breakdown. Yeast attacks a piece of dough and it starts to puff it up. And it has to have other substances with it to do that, such as he talks about honey and other things to ferment. False teachings we've learned so far is one of the reasons Yahweh says to remove leavening. Get it out. And if you don't, it'll corrupt the spiritual body. We have people who come in with a doctrine, teaching, and they go around, you don't even know what's happening, just like leaven. And all of a sudden, somebody goes. Oh, they went with him. Where'd they go? I don't know. So they take off, never see him again, never hear from him again. The leaven's worked. The falsity has done its work. It happens over and over because leaven was there to work. And that's why regular fellowship is so important for all of us. It's all important. We make regular course corrections during Yahweh's feast times, just like this one and others. A sister wrote just this week, she said, I saw the full moon. Did we keep Passover right? I don't know where she got that. And I wrote back and said, we go by the new moon. And yes, we had it right on the calendar because we confirmed it. But, you know, if without somebody to talk to, she might take off on this harebrained idea and think you got to confirm it by the full moon. Another one wrote, says, it looks like Passover is just for men. Because all you see in the Bible is men keeping it. Yahshua's disciples, the Israelites, you know. Show me where it's for everybody, for women too. Well, of course, it's Yahweh says in his word that the feasts are for the family. We've read that over and over. But people get these harebrained, leavened ideas. Another one says, we talked about this last night. He says, I've got a trunk full of leaven out of my car. And I plan to bring it back in when the feast is over. I took it out of my house and I'm bringing it back in. And show me in a scripture that, because you said in the newsletter that you can't do that. Well, I said, obviously. I mean, if you look at the meaning of leavening, you don't want to take something that's corruptible out and then bring it back in. Just like being baptized and then go back, you know, doing the same things you did before. You change. Well, that wasn't good enough. So I went to Exodus. Let's go to Exodus chapter 12, verse 15. Because this is what we quoted in the newsletter that he wasn't satisfied with. And we could have even gone into it in more depth and probably would have cleared it up. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Even the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. Put away. In the Hebrew, that word, and actually it's remove, and as we talked about last night, is related to the Sabbath even, a root of the Sabbath. It says cause to cease, and this is in relation to the Sabbath means work, you cease work. But in this regard, it means cause to cease, terminate, destroy. Harper Collins' note says, cause to stop. You take the leaven, you destroy it, and it's gone. You don't bring it back in. That's what the Hebrew instructs us to do. Young's literal translation says, in the first day you cause leaven to cease out of your houses. It's gone. It ceases. It isn't there anymore. It means more than just take it out. It means to destroy it. And the Jews, well, some of the more liberal Jews will sell it to their friends. Say, all the leavening in my house is worth $20. Give me $20. So they give them $20 and say, okay, it's yours. It's not mine anymore. I don't have to take it out of my house. And at the end of the feast, they say, here's your $20 back. I'm buying my leavening back. That's one of the ways they get around that one. Yahweh says, get rid of it. Get it out and remove it. In Egypt, they did what the Egyptians did. So much so that Yahweh even had to reintroduce himself to them. They had forgotten who he was for so long. Exodus chapter 3. They didn't realize. I mean, he had gone so far out of their mind that they didn't even know who he was, what he expected, and who they were. Exodus chapter 3, verse 14. As Yahweh's people, they didn't understand. So Yahweh says, okay, here I am. And he says, I am that I am. He used his name, Hayah. And he said, thus shall you say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. And this, he says to moreover to Moses, thus shall you say unto the children of Israel, Yahweh, Elohim of your fathers, the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, has sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my zakar, to mark, so as to be recognized. This is my recognizable name. When you hear this name, you'll know it's me and nobody else. To remember me by. And by implication, it means to mention. Mention his name, use his name. So people will learn that he's not just like all the others that people worship. Well, their dough, when they left Egypt, was freshly mixed but wasn't leavened at that point. It meant they were about to start a new life, free from the corruption of Egypt and the corruption of the world, and, you know, just as pure as can be. And it meant they were to embark on a quest for sincerity and truth. That's why he told them to come out, keep a feast to me in the wilderness, to follow truth. Sincerity and truth. We can compare ourselves precisely to their situation in Egypt. The world's influences are all around us, and they don't stop with the world. They influence even Yahweh's people. Even Yahweh's people. Whether we know it or not, you come out of Walmart at Xmas time and you're singing those songs in your mind. Don't even realize it's corrupting. It's so insidious. It's so sneaky, and that's really why leavening is so dangerous. It's sneaky. It works slowly, and you're not always aware of it. And you can be brought in by its action. That's why we don't want to be that close to the world. It'll rub off. Yahweh says to come out and be separate. Don't touch that unclean thing. Take Lot in Sodom. He knew what sin was. He knew what evil was because it says he was a righteous man. He and his family were righteous people. In other words, they didn't live like the world. The only ones around that didn't. They couldn't find 10. So, what happened? He didn't want to go. He was comfortable. He probably said, this is my home. I know it's not perfect, but this is where I live. Yahweh says, you can't live here. I'm going to destroy it, or it'll destroy you. Well, he didn't like that, but Yahweh forced him out, and then he left. Gross sin. He knew that that leaven would work and work, and pretty soon Abraham could be influenced. His family could be influenced. I'm sorry, Lot. Over in Genesis 19, Lot and his family had a problem. The leaven of the place had affected them. You wouldn't think, you know, somebody that knows the truth could be affected. Oh, yes. We even see that happening today. People that should know better get off on some leavening, some false teaching. And when the morning arose, then the angels hasted Lot, saying, arise. They hasted him. That means they had to get him out. He was goofing around, not leaving. Arise, take your wife, your two daughters, which are here, lest you be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, he still couldn't get out of there. The men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and the hand of his two daughters. They pulled him out. Yahweh being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. And it came to pass when they had brought him forth abroad that he said, escape for your life. Look not behind you, neither stay thou in the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest you be consumed. And Lot said unto them, oh, not so, my master, my Yahweh. Not so. Behold, now your servant has found grace in your sight, and you have magnified your mercy, which you have showed unto me in saving my life. And I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. And he said unto him, see, I have accepted you concerning this thing also, that I will not overthrow this city for the which you have spoken. Haste, you, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till you become thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. Little, smallness. Just a little berg out there. He said, let me go there. And Yahweh says, okay, I won't destroy that one. But apparently that whole plain then just went up in an inferno. It's like a nuclear attack. Leaven has been slow to work. Started really after World War II in this country. Leavening started to corrupt our society. And it got worse in the 1960s. The face of our schools has changed dramatically the last quarter century. The school curriculum, what's going on there? I don't think you even want to know anymore. They don't teach so much English as values. They want to get you to start thinking like the world, bring in the corruption of the world, degrade. They condition the children with psychological conditioning programs that say, you can be somebody. You know, self-respect is important. That's key to everything. If you don't have that, and people start believing that stuff, and pretty soon there's no more any core of anything righteous there. It's all humanism. And the purpose is to desensitize the children, make them think like the world. Sex education has little to do with facts, but a lot to do with values. Not biblical values either. There's the leavening in our world working. People think this probably is strange. We come out and place leavening out of our lives. But think about what it means. It's key. It's key to who Yahweh's people are, to take this corruption and remove it. symbolically, of course, but more importantly, spiritually. In Romans chapter 1, verse 25, more leavening in the world, who changed the truth of Elohim into a lie and worshiped and served the creature more than the Creator. More fulfilled prophecy here. Serving the creature more than the Creator. Serving the environment more than they would a poor baby heading for the abortion clinic. That doesn't matter. It's the environment that's important, because they're worshiping now in the ways that the heathen had done thousands of years before. Yeast spores, you know, they settle on anything. You can put some bread out there pretty soon. Pretty soon, is he gone? Okay, thanks. It starts small and it works quietly. Before you realize it, everything's changed. Like yeast spores. Everywhere. You can't escape them. They're in the air, just like wasps, wherever they just land somewhere. You know, they're just our grandparents. You know, I would be shocked. I would be almost embarrassed to have my grandparents come back to this world and see what it's like now. They left in the 60s, late 60s. But can you imagine? They came now and saw what this world is all about, what it's done. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6, Paul says, get rid of the old leavening. Get rid of the old leavening. Your glorying is not good. Why? Why were they glorying? Because they were caught up in it as well. They were caught up in the corruption. Purge out therefore, verse 7, the old leaven, that you may be a new lump. As you are unleavened, for even Messiah, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Of course, he's also speaking metaphorically, and that's the lesson here. Become a new lump, untainted by the world's leaven. Two words in the Hebrew are translated leavening, seor. Interesting that seor sounds like sour, doesn't it? And that's where we get our word sour, believe it or not. There was a book by a man who, I think they called it The Word, and he showed how so many of our English words today trace right back to the Hebrew. Well, here's one of them. Seor. Seor dough. Sourdough. Fermented dough used to leaven bread. The other is kamates, which means strictly leavened bread. Yahweh wanted nothing corruptible in sacrifice to him, which really tells us all about worship today, doesn't it? Nothing in our worship should be corrupted when we go before him. Some argue, well, it doesn't matter how we worship Yahweh as long as our hearts are right. Your hearts won't be right unless you're in line with what Yahweh wants. That's the only way it works. When he commands us once a year to examine how we worship, examine what we teach, examine what we learn, like at this feast, that's exactly what he wants us to do. We have to be aware of the elements of deceit and wickedness and not let them begin to ferment. Unleavened bread, or matzah, was to be eaten for 7 days. And he said, if you don't eat it every day, you'll be cut off. If you don't take the Passover, you'll be cut off. Very clear. He doesn't want it anywhere in our coast or in our land. Deuteronomy 16:4. As a matter of fact, this man who thought he could take the leavening out and then bring it back, well, according to Yahweh, once you get it out of the coast, I mean, that means to the far extent of the limits of Israel. It's going to be hard to get all that back, isn't it, once you get it that far? Again, confirming, you get rid of it. It's gone. No more. No more you're going to have it around. And there shall no, Deuteronomy 16:4, there shall be no leavened bread seen with you in any, all of your coast 7 days. Neither shall be any of the flesh which you sacrifice the first day at even remain all night until the morning. So here we have this matzah is supposed to be gone. And so far gone, It's out of the county, so to speak. You don't even get it back. Obviously, if our nation were worshiping Yahweh, which it will someday, I guess, you get it out, it's way far gone, you know, 1,000 miles away or whatever. Turn to Exodus chapter. I guess I already used that. I was going to bring in that man's question about Exodus 11:15. I think we answered that. There are a number of ways to leaven or puff up something. Anything that expands dough, you can do it by making air bubbles, but that's not true leavening. You know, like chiffon or angel food cake. That's done mostly by like egg whites expanding, you know, as does gluten. Gluten is just an elastic part of the protein that gives bread its substance, its shape, and its, you know, its chewiness. But these aren't really leavened in the biblical sense, in the scriptural sense. Seor and kametz refers to an action of yeast or a leavening product, agent, that actually makes it, through a chemical reaction, puff up and not just, you know, mechanically beaten into it as you would these other things like angel food cake. There isn't any, as we mentioned in the newsletter, there's no leavening in soft drinks. And even though they call it soda, I think at one time it was made by that process. It was, I think it was phosphoric acid they put in with it. And you get phosphates. You ever had a phosphate? Maybe Landis and Millie remember that. The little town I lived in out in western Kansas, this drugstore still had the, you go in there and they still had the soda fountain. And the people would call out, let's go get a phosphate. Well, that would be a leavening drink because that was done chemically to bubble up. But they don't do that today. They just shoot the drink with carbon dioxide pressured into the water, carbonated water, and you get the fizz. It's not a natural process. But wine is. Wine is done through the action of yeast in beer, too. But it requires the addition of a leavening agent. Spiritually speaking, we have already made reference to what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 5. But we have there leavening working on two different levels. The people were puffed up over their acceptance of this man, and they accepted it because they were from a pagan past. This type of thing was not uncommon among the pagans. They had all sorts of perversions going on. The pagans did. So they thought, well, you know, they hadn't gone very far in their spiritual walk. This was okay. This was okay. I mean, we did it, you know, ages ago. We did it when we before we came into the truth. It's no big deal. We wondered how they could even do that. But he even mentions that. He even mentions that it's worse than the nations around them and so forth. But that was from their past. And the family structure was violated constantly. No wonder the same happens today in our culture. The leaven of prideful tolerance had spread, and now the Corinthian assembly was filled with, puffed up with it. And Paul was concerned that this man's actions would leaven everything, and they had to get it out. Is that cruel? No. No, it's not cruel. It's considerate. It's considerate of others. People have this notion that punishment is cruel. No, it's not. It's considerate of the rest of the culture and society. You have to get it out. You have to change that person or he's going to corrupt. You're going to have leavening all over the place in the culture itself if you don't deal with people like that and get them out of the culture one way or the other. What is unleavened bread? We've talked about it in the past. What are its characteristics, that unleavened bread we have? Well, it's tough, very hard on the, sometimes hard on the teeth. We make it a little softer, I guess, than they used to. That old hardtack they had in the West, it was hard. You break your teeth on it. They have to, you know, they bite into that. But then it wouldn't spoil either. You know, it's there's no moisture in it. How could it spoil? You know, there's bacteria in everything, practically. There's bacteria in the milk you buy. You only preserve it because you put it in the refrigerator and keep that bacteria from growing. But it's there, like kind of like leavening. It's always there. You just have to control it. Well, leavening is hard. It's tough and it's hard. And it's not popular. Just like Yahweh's name, it's not popular. People don't understand it. And if they do understand it, they don't like to accept it. Well, Yahweh's people have tried to stay on the right way, standing on sound principles and sticking with truth isn't always easy in a day when virtually nothing matters anymore. Matthew chapter 5, verse 11, Yahshua promised it wouldn't be easy when you tell others the faith, the truth, but you have to when the alternative is death. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. All manner of evil falsely. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. They don't want to hear the truth. They'll hear some knucklehead who has not had any scriptural training at all, who worked behind the scenes in his dad's ministry. Now all of a sudden he comes on the scene, big smile all the time, and draws tens of thousands of people by telling you, you can have your good life now, and all that stuff. He says he won't even talk about the Bible because he doesn't know anything about the Bible. And yet, fulfilled prophecy right there. Prophesy unto me smooth things. Deceit. Wasting their time with junk and not getting into the scriptures. That's what we find today. Fulfilled prophecy. They want smooth things. They want easy things. Tell me I can be somebody. Healthy and wealthy, and I want all that now. You know, Yahweh never promises that in his Bible. Never says you're promised health and wealth on this earth and happiness. In fact, Yahshua says you're going to have the opposite. You're going to have persecution if you follow the truth. And yet people won't listen to that because they want their ears tickled by something else. John chapter 15, in verse 20, it says, remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his master. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake. So just remember that. It's for his name's sake. Don't let it bother you, because they know not him that sent me. They don't know his name, and they think you've made something up. And besides, that's not what they're used to, so they don't want to do it. We don't set the course. Yahweh sets the course. We just try to follow that course, that narrow way. And that means we will at times be forced to give up friends, forced to separate from even family. Lot had to give up Sodom. Israel had to give up Egypt. People had to give up those that persecuted them, even close relatives. But Yahweh says this is it. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12, Paul tells Timothy, young Timothy there, trying to learn, you know, trying to get some training on what's coming up, if he's going to go out and minister the word. And Paul says, this is what's going to happen, Timothy. Chapter 3 and verse 12. Yea, and all that will live righteously in Messiah shall be happy beyond their dreams, have everything they want. They'll have their best life now. Oh, they read a different Bible. Yea, and all that will live righteously in Messiah Yahshua shall suffer persecution. Persecution. Why? Well, because the truth divides. You tell somebody the truth, they don't want to hear it because it forces them to make a change in their life. And that's the last thing that they're interested in doing. In Luke chapter 9, verse 62, once we make this commitment, we don't back away from it. We go all the way. Yahshua said unto him, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom. We've made a commitment. We go forward. We have to. When a body of believers goes into apostasy, there's going to be people who will stay because, why? Friends are there. Maybe relatives are there. A lot of leavening could be there, but not the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. The word is crystal clear, brethren. We put nothing before Yahweh. The first commandment says, and the most important commandment, you'll have no other mighty ones before me. Nothing. When you put Yahweh first, all of these things we talk about every Sabbath, every feast, are put in motion. All of these things, when you put Yahweh first. First commandment is number one, in more ways than one. Because when you put Yahweh above all, then everything that he commands, you follow and you do. And you have no other mighty ones before him. Well, there's going to come a day soon when many won't be able to stand for the truth. They'll be asked to choose, and they won't be able to do it. Like the rich young ruler, I can't leave it. I can't leave that wealth I have. I can't do it. Yahusha talked to thousands. He convinced thousands. A lot of those people he convinced were there because they wanted something in their belly. You know, he could manufacture food out of thin air. That's what they followed him around for. They wanted something to eat. People haven't changed much. He had 12 of the closest disciples, and every one of them denied him. Or at least were not with him at the end. They went the other way. As we learn at Passover, Yahusha died alone. Not one person could stick by him when the rubber hit the road. And that's pretty bad, isn't it? Imagine how he felt. Being on this earth, ministering for 3.5 years. I think Billy Graham once said, you know, we've had thousands, hundreds of thousands of people come to our, quote, crusades. And you know, I look at the world and it's like I haven't made a dent. I haven't done a thing. The world just keeps getting worse and worse. What have I done? Imagine how Yahusha felt, same way. It's too tough. Unleavened bread is not popular. We all made a choice when we got immersed. We don't stop. We enter in the body of Messiah. We keep on going. In fact, just everything just begins. Are we ready to make the hard choices? I guess that's the question we ask today. Are we ready to become unpopular? Because the world is getting to the point where you can see the drumbeat of persecution coming. Truth, like unleavened bread, is the bread of affliction. The Hebrew derives the prime root, anah, affliction, as looking down, browbeating, abasing. Unleavened bread, not popular. Until Schnucks came to town, we had a hard time finding matzos. We practically had to beg Walmart to carry them. They did for a couple years. And then all of a sudden, no more matzos. Why? Well, nobody buy it. Nobody wanted it. So they quit carrying it. They only give people what they want. That's kind of like the religion of the world, you know. Give them what they want, not what they need. Very prophetic in some ways. Leavened bread is everywhere. You can go and, I mean, you go out to eat. You got to be careful because this could be leaven, that could be leaven. So, like today, I just ate a bunch of fruit. I know that's not leavened, but you never know. It's soft, it's mushy, it's easy to chew, it's tasty. Everybody likes it. They give them what they like. Demands nothing of you. You do what you want, no problem. You don't need to keep those feast days. Don't need to keep the Sabbath. I was reading the Seventh-day Adventist magazine, and they walk a very tricky line, you know, because they have to, because they keep the Sabbath, and the Sabbath is part of the law. So when people ask them, well, now, are you law keepers or not? They kind of have to dance. Well, you know, the Sabbath is important. I mean, that's very important. But we realize that you're saved by grace, and we're not going to be legalists, which means you earn your salvation through the law, through your obedience. But their arguments are just, it's crazy. Are you or aren't you? Do you or don't you? You know, if it doesn't matter, then why keep the Sabbath? But that's what they're built on, so they have to keep the Sabbath. They know that. That's their doctrinal, you know, number one platform of their doctrine. I want to turn to Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 8. I'm not going to go too long today, but I thought it's important that we go through this again to remember what we're really here for and how it impacts our life. Ephesians 2, verse 8, "By grace are you saved through faith, and not of yourselves. It is the gift of Elohim, not of works, lest any man should boast." We understand that. But then he says, "But some say that it is," a man once said, "that it is something we must do then?" And he answered himself with the old leavened response, "Absolutely nothing, it is of Yahweh." He never went on to the next verse, which says, "For we are his workmanship, created in Messiah Yahshua unto good works, which Yahweh has before ordained that we should walk in them." And never go on to that next verse. There's nothing we can do to earn our salvation, obviously. There's nothing that your child can do to earn that bread you give him every day. He's just there and you give it to him out of love. He can't earn it. He just can't. He can't even function in an earning way. So we give it to them out of love, just as Yahweh does. We can't earn anything beyond our death because our death ends our existence until Yahweh resurrects us. But he's not out to save the entire world. If he were, Satan's winning. But he will not save the unrepentant sinner. We know that too. So that each of us is to be found worthy for the walk we're on. We don't do it for a point system. You know, as we're tallying up points, one in the plus column, one in the minus column. Hopefully at the end we got more pluses than minuses. That's not how we do it. 1 Corinthians 6:9. "Know you not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of Elohim?" Oh, well then, what does that mean? And as this article said, no, we don't. We're not legalists. We're not earning anything, but we're called to be a righteous person. How are we doing that? How are you a righteous person? He goes on and lists a bunch of sins. Man, a whole bunch of them, all the way through verse 10. He says, "None of these people shall inherit the kingdom. And such were some of you, but you are washed. You are sanctified." The implication is, you don't do this anymore. That means that you adhere to a law, a standard. "But you are justified in the name of the Master Yahshua and by the Spirit of our Elohim." There is something we do. We get the leaven out of false teachings. We get the wickedness out, and we take in the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Obedience derives from faith, Romans 1:5 says. "The righteous shall live by faith," Romans 1:17, Galatians 3:11. What makes them righteous? Acts chapter 18, verse 20 defines it very well. Acts 18 and verse 20. "When they desired him to tarry longer a time with them, he consented not. But he bade them farewell, saying, 'I must by all means keep this feast which comes at Jerusalem, but I will return unto you if Elohim will.' And he sailed from Ephesus. And when he had landed at Caesarea and gone up and saluted the assembly, he went down to Antioch. And after he had spent some time there, he departed and went over all the country of Galatia and Phrygia in order, strengthening all the disciples." This is the speaking of the Feast of Tabernacles. He said, I must go do this. I must. Ezekiel 18, verse 5 says, if a man be just and do that is lawful and right, he'll live. Yahshua said in Matthew 12, 50, that whoever does the will of my Father, the same is my brother and sister and mother. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 19. People get all concerned and all twisted up and don't understand that Yahweh's standards are there for them, for their life. It's just their own heart that refuses. 2 Timothy 2:19. Nevertheless, the foundation of Elohim stands sure, having this seal. Yahweh knows them that are His. Why? How does He know them that are His? And let everyone that names the name of Messiah depart from what? Iniquity. Doing bad things. Abraham Lincoln said, when I do good, I feel good. When I do bad, I feel bad. That's my religion. Well, what does Yahweh say? Depart from iniquity. How does anybody know what bad is? Through the standard Yahweh put in His word. That's the only way we know. It's the only way we know. What makes wrong wrong? Yahweh says so. It's the only standard we have in this world. Without the Bible, we wouldn't know. Romans chapter 6 and verse 6, it says, impale the old nature. The old nature. Romans 6, verse 6. Knowing this, that our old man is impaled with him, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. For he that is dead is freed from sin, because he cannot sin any longer. Sin has no more rule over him. The lesson of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is this. Are we willing to remove? Are we willing to suffer with a little bit of difficult bread? Something that's not pleasant? Something that doesn't necessarily taste good? For something greater? To adhere to the truth no matter what? To be able to sacrifice whatever it might take? If we can't do this, how are we going to do the big stuff? You know, that's the whole thing we're learning here in Yahweh's Word. That's the whole thing we learn in this life. If we can't sacrifice the little things, we're not ready for the big things. There's nothing that Yahweh can't do. And there's nothing that He promised us that we can't do. But we need to do what He says to do. And by that we learn the lessons. It's all about learning lessons. Lessons here, lessons there. Spiritual lessons that we apply and that we teach our children. And that's what all that matters is that we follow Yahweh, do His will, and come before Him at the times He's appointed. That each of us will be pleasing in His sight. We can't earn anything, but we can please Him. And if we please Him, that's all that matters, isn't it? We please Him by following His ways and His will. So may these lessons, this review, be of value to you as you go through the second half of this feast and eat that unleavened bread of sincerity and truth, the bread of affliction that isn't so easy to eat but is so filled with meaning and importance. May Yahweh bless you.